Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
articles that I can remember from the latest New Scientist. Now, I've just got to really continuously train my memory. I've still got to do some brain training apps and stuff like that. My computer's off at the moment because I noticed a program I didn't ask to come up. It was asking to be installed, and sure enough, I've done a vast virus scan on it, and it's got a virus in it. So I'm got it doing this, multiple, probably be a, 6 hours to do a full virus scan of my bloated computer. So in that time, I'm going off on a walk. I walked to the local gym, an all-night gym, and I'll just sort of get plugging away. But before I went, I read A New Scientist and thought, oh, bloody hell, I'm going to try and memorize or remember some of the articles. Now, there was an article saying that human intelligence would be expanded, or our horizons would expand, if we embraced artificial intelligence or neural networks, or that appears to be the way that artificial intelligence is going. So my first experience of artificial intelligence was from listening to a group of Australian scientists from Florida who had actually built a neural network. I think it's only several 70 nodes. So it's apparently a small neural network, and it was based on modeling of neurons. That is, it would the neurons would be interconnected, and if there was sufficient stimulus from the other neurons, it would cause it to fire. And one of the things I noticed that in training it, they had to let it rest. Now, of course, reading this article, you realise that things have come a long, long way since then. And yeah, I suppose I wonder whether neural networks are intrinsically analog devices, or how they actually operate. Now, there's Deep Blue, Deep Mind, the IBM ones, which are sort of large computers which play chess. And then there's, I don't know, it's from the same organization, maybe from Google, the Alpha ones. And there's AlphaGo, which learned to play Go. And I suppose the various attributes. So that is a Chinese strategy game with marbles. And the person, I suppose the facts I picked up was that the person who played them thought they were highly intuitive, creative, and didn't go on a basic defensive strategy. It was a very attacking player. And playing against artificial intelligence was able to improve some of the players' rankings. So there was the top European player moved from 600th to 300th in the world. Gives you an idea about how insignificant Europe is in terms of playing Go. I suppose the question I had was whether that that single movement is sufficient. Oh, my bloody hell, it's absolutely freezingly cold. as I'm walking up here, but hopefully I'll warm up in the gym. Then there's Alpha Start, or Alpha Star, because there's a multiplayer computer game where this person, where you, it's an online environment, and you go through various levels, and I think it's Stardust or something like that. And this person got beaten, and again the artificial intelligence didn't go for and build a defense that went straight to the attack, which is sort of rather, I suppose, I find a bit a bit interesting, I suppose. Be interesting to see two artificial intelligence engines fight each other. But essentially that's what it does anyway, in terms of when it's not playing you, it's awake, playing itself. And then there's also the group called Alpha Zero. And that's where it was able to teach it to play itself, to play chess, by just downloading the rules for chess. And I think it played 10 million games within 4 hours, and basically became as good as any chess computer from zero. And what had happened is that all of the people after playing the computers got beaten, worked out how to collaborate with them, and now they have teams of a person on the computer versus a person on the computer. And I suppose the interesting thing I noted there, or read there, is that being an expert meant, or an amateur with computer is who's better at teamwork. Is probably better, is a better combination. So that's the end of that that article. I was trying to think, there was this really flaky headline article which was almost complete vacuum. Yeah, there's a I should go on another quantum physics article about again it went on the Bell's paradox, or Bell's inequality, which says about whether you can detect randomness from detecting quantum properties. Again, I just think so this idea had a three observer system. This is in entanglement quantum cryptography, and that's where you, and just reading it, you just felt, my God, this person has made an error somewhere. And this was saying there were three aspects to Bell's inequality, which is something which I found interesting. One was, I'd really have to look at it. One was non-locality, and I've forgotten what the two others were, but it was the idea that you can't have all three at the same time, so for indication that there was a problem in there. I don't know what it was. So Bell's, the idea is that you produce untangled, so you produce entangled photons and split them. Or entangled particles, but I suppose entangled photons. You split them and they go three separate ways. Now, you can easily do that by putting a single UV photon into a downgrade crystal and get the reverse three photon addition. You get a three photon subtraction, you get 3 identical photons out. Now, the idea is that you then measure these photons. Now, again, they never seem to say this, that if you have a polarized beam going in for sufficiently long that it is determined that you will get 3 entangled photons of exactly the same polarization, or in this case they were talking about spin. So I don't quite understand how you do that with spin particles. I suppose you can have entangled electrons, entangled anything, I suppose. How you inform determine 2 electrons have the same state. Okay, so you produce these, and they're saying, look, if you happen to measure its spin up, you know, the various ones spin up, it's determined that the last photon is spin down. And that for me, in terms of sort of a hard thing to, for me to grapple with, because you're imparting, say if you produce 3 photons, you necessarily have to subtract some angular momentum. So each particle, electron, has either plus or minus 1 units of angular momentum h in it, each photon. So we have a problem here that if I produce a 2 photons from a crystal fire in a UV, and out pops 2 blue photons, and they both have angular momentum. Well, the angular momentum can't be created from nothing. And so what must happen is that the angular momentum comes from the doubling crystal. You know, that's the way it is. I've got these, I suppose, questions. Now, spin is intrinsically of a particle is its angular momentum. So they have this thing that we have these 3 particles go through 3 different people, Alice, Bob, and Charlie. Strange that they have 2 males. It's usually female, male, female is the rest of the way to go through. So I'm a little bit suspicious of this already. And then they say, if Alice measures spin up, Bob measures spin down, or spin up, Charles must measure spin down. Now, I sort of can see how this can happen, but you don't have random spin generated by a nonlinear mixing crystal. No, if you have one polarization, linear polarization, you've got linear polarization out. There's sort of conservation there. However, what you have to do to create the randomness is that you have to have sufficiently short duration that the pulse is sufficiently fast that you don't actually monitor. You create uncertainty. So you, by limiting the time, you change the energy and other properties coming in. And this doesn't seem always to get through. Now, it really means I have to go back and study it. Some other articles are about, on this one is about this weird electric field that's helping plants grow. And it just seems to me that, you know, it's been toyed at within the turn of last century, and now it's in Chinese fields. It just really seems like stupid science. And they show all these fields from, or glass houses from Mongolia and all that type of stuff. And the idea that voltage on the plants could help them by creating free radicals, which act as a sort of a pesticide around them, and also as a and being electrified, the insect going to bite it gets electrified and kills itself. Now, I just think the person writing the article have to know that the insect would have to actually make contact with the ground and the actual plant itself. If it landed on the plant, it wouldn't be electrified. So, you know, it'd be nice if you could rate these articles before you even read them. You have to read through them and just realize, oh my god, it's trash. Then there's a few articles on malaria. It's an interesting person finding that malaria changes the crystal structure within blood, and it changes the fluorescence. So he has got an LED device which will detect malaria. Now, my general thing is that, you know, what are false positives? You know, this is something that normally this is a person, I think, in Uganda doing this. Now, normally what we do is we put these things through massive clinical trials before we report on them. False negatives, but really none of this has been done whatsoever in this process. And really, I suppose when you're writing it, you've got your obligation to remind the reader to do this. Now, for some reason, again, the head article was about the use of gene drives to actually knock out malaria. What I suppose, which is interesting, that most of the malaria deaths are caused by people in Africa, and this is effectively being treated by having this is in this article, but free mosquito nets, and I suppose they have now testing. It was very interesting that there's, I think, 5 strains of malaria listed in Papua New Guinea, and going out, they did actually mention that an outbreak in malaria killed half the, when it broke out in Europe, it killed half the population. Probably a bit hard to fathom. And they said that the insects and the disease is evolving resistance. And then I talked a little bit about gene drives to actually, and this is where you install the gene, the ability to put you install CRISPR engineering into the gene, you can ensure that if one insect mates, it goes in and it then copies itself. The gene editing copies itself onto the next, on the male and female line, so you can ensure that a genetic code goes through. What I don't understand is how how this is one step to extinction. So obviously things have survived long enough to spread throughout their population. So as far as I could understand, is it would be something that you can ensure there's genetic weakness throughout their population, or I don't know, something that occurs that I don't know exactly how the actual gene thing goes. So CRISPR is Cas9. Now it's interesting that they've got Cas. I'll have to really research this. So they have the Cas9 gene shear protein, which operates on a I think it's a special type of RNA. It's not messenger RNA. There's this section of RNA which goes into the Cas9, so it knows where to cut, and when it reaches there, it cuts. Now I'm just going to have to really, really reread that before I get back in about to work about gene drives. Now I'm sort of coming up to the road down which I'll go and get the the gym and get going. So I might look at the, apparently while you're working there's a screen there you can look at some YouTubes, and I'll see if I can really get that Cas9 and gene drives into my head to go back. Then there was this story about a whole lot of things you have to really ask yourself about space. So recently in space, this is a different article, sending out just basic shit into space. So a cookie oven, a football, some slime from the Nickelodeon channel. And, really, essentially, you had to really ask it in terms of whether the person's going to have the use of money and the sort of greenhouse gas and the effect of all this type of stuff. And, I don't know, there's just so many. I think when you're actually sending up into space, it's complete nutter crap. So what they were sending at Nickelodeon, the cartoon cable TV channel. It is interesting how Nickelodeon has sort of come from the Hanna-Barbera school and all that sort of stuff. How it's sort of evolved, and how there's just sort of endless drivel there. And they're going to show astronauts with the non-Newtonian slime hitting it around up in orbit. Now, the guy must admit, surely you'd have it in the vomit comic for the amount that they're going to film. It's just sort of like over-the-top stupid to do it in terms of do we really need to know? Then there was, I think, just scamming the top, a article on Jupiter's core. Again, Chinese person. It seems like that they're picking up a huge amount of I don't know whether you'd call it something which needs peer review. G'day. It's something that needs peer review. Say again? Oh, no, it's how you going. All right, see you, mate. That poor bastard. So this is saying that he believes that Jupiter's core is sort of slightly smashed up because it's still smashed up from a collision 4.5 billion years ago. Sort of, I don't know. It doesn't really count for me. The another sort of strange thing sent up in space is squid, and that was a I suppose that's to see whether you have the squid, the bioluminescence, with the bioluminescence still going to the squid in zero gravity. Now, again, I find that a bit hard to fathom. Again, on bioluminescence, the people, as I'm walking past the soccer field at night, these people thought that you'd be able to see the bioluminescence from space because these stars going, these red dwarf stars produce copious amounts of dangerous ultraviolet light. Maybe I find that statement a bit hard to fathom myself personally, because the black body radiation curve, but that's what it's did. This is the whole stuff. I mean, it's in general, in New Scientist, you read these things and you go, I'm just a bit uncomfortable with that. So, the idea is that these distant planets will be glowing sufficient due to the bioluminescence of primitive life forms, which are downgrading the ultraviolet light to a form, a more. So, corals glow in ultraviolet light, and the reasons they do glow, and this is interesting stuff, is to convert the ultraviolet light into safer, usable energy. So that's an interesting thing for me, that why corals glow. I don't know if you've ever seen corals glow in ultraviolet light. It just seems to be a thing that they did. So yeah, there's also a story in there about the national or the British not having enough measles vaccines and them dying off. I just really, really rather wonder whether the anti-vaccination of people will actually die out due to Darwinistic events. There was also the which I found rather interesting, the article looking at bony outcrops in the ears, that if it's called surfer's ears, so if you're in the water a lot, you get a bony build up in your ear, and these people have looked at these Neanderthal skulls and concluded, and this is from 23 skulls, that the Neanderthals were basically surfers or had lived an aquatic life. Now, my basic thing, having the fucking freezing, how it's cold here, how any person, how any Neanderthal would actually survive. Now, it's interesting that the Neanderthals had art, jewellery, customs, burials. I mean, what they didn't do is they probably didn't pay taxes or anything like that. I must admit that's a bit on the lightweight. Yeah, I'm sure it's a bit of a telltale sign. I think it's really worthwhile for me thinking and recalling through that. And I'm just nearly up to this this gym absolutely freezing. So that's telling you exactly how long it takes to get there. And look, it's at night and I won't be alone. There'll be about three or four people, just looking at the number of people who've pulled up, three or four people in there. And I'll just get in there and do possibly an hour, 2 hours, a treadmill and bikes and stuff like that, just to slowly knock things off. I had this fantastic Afghan. I ate out on the weekend and I think I put on a kilo of stuff. And so you just have to, and I just said, what the hell, I'm out, I'm just going to eat what I want. So I've sort of got to pay the price. Okay, so that's the end of the podcast as I'm coming up to Anytime Fitness.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.